Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, everybody? Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. Thank you so much for being here today. Obviously, not the game that we wanted to discuss, not the conversations that we want to be having, not the injuries that we were looking to see in this game. Everything went about 5 degrees of wrong in this game. I always say in the offseason, it's fun because hope springs eternal. Then the regular season happens, and sometimes that hope that you've had can immediately come crashing and you all of a sudden have an injury that can derail everything. Now, to be crystal clear, we don't know what's going on with Jordan Love yet or the severity of the injury. The game at this point is secondary, and we're basically going to treat that as such today. I will go over the game in great detail, but the primary concern here is about the health of Jordan Love. You can overcome a bad game, and that was almost expected to a team. Not that many mistakes, which we'll get to in a moment, but you easily could have understood and imagined exactly a performance where both sides are sloppy and you're not getting maybe the performance that you'd have expected. The field conditions, we'll talk about that. All of that is going to be afterthought in a few weeks if Jordan's healthy, right? Like, this is going to be one performance out of 17. They can easily learn from the mistakes in this one, move on. It was a very interesting game to break down. All of that is water under the bridge. But the Jordan Love injury is something that could be, you know, catastrophic to the season. Now, of course, when something like this happens, all of the pro football doctors come out. Everyone all of a sudden is a doctor. Everyone's had an ACL injury. Everyone knows what to look for. And there's some camera views where it looks like a pop here. There, here were the Twitter doctors out there that were trying to, you know, come up and you know, get conclusions as to what happened. Jesse Morse, MD, said could be an ACL, an MCL, a high ankle sprain, a dislocated kneecap, or a mild ankle sprain. Okay, well, that narrows it down. David J. Chow, the pro football doc, which is an interesting background for him, by the way, but he said it's a high ankle sprain. All right. Jeff Miller said, I'm hoping it's not a pivot shift of the tibia, could be an ACL and an MCL. Dr. Evan Jeffries said ACL tear, patella dislocation, high ankle sprain, MCL sprain. All of those are in the thought process here of what it could be. Parsa Salem, MD, said it was a classic MCL tear. Deepak Chong said high ankle with possible ACL and MCL injuries. All of this is to say, I don't care. None of this matters. And the fact that we've got six of the greatest Twitter doctors known to man that have all different thoughts and processes of what this could possibly be, and there's no real consensus. Okay, we've narrowed it down to ACL, MCL, high ankle sprain, dislocated kneecap, mild ankle sprain. Let's see. Do we do a patella dislocation? Classic MCL tear. Yeah, so we've got like seven different diagnoses here. It's going to be one of them. I'm fairly confident that it's going to be one of those seven diagnoses. Which one it is, we have no idea at this point. And whatever we are seeing on Twitter, whichever one of these that you went out and saw and maybe looked at, or you know, maybe you heard from somebody else, who's, we just don't know until the MRI is done. And right now, the plane, as I'm recording this at 3:32 in the morning, the plane is in the air. They won't even land in Green Bay till noon. We got no update from Matt LaFleur. Matt Schneidman said that that Jordan was walking with a slight limp, walked out of the locker room with no help. That also does not mean a ton, by the way. He's going to need the MRI, and that will determine exactly what the issue was. Now, I've seen people say, you know, hey, look at what happened to Patrick Mahomes, and it looked like this brutal injury, and he was out 2 weeks. Sure, if it's that, that's going to be great, great news. If it's a mild ankle sprain, he could be back potentially playing this week. If it's a high ankle, could be maybe 4 to 6 weeks. If it's an MCL, ACL, depending on the severity of the MCL, probably looking at out for the year. So that's the timeline we're looking at here. Playing next week, 1 to 2 week injury, 4 to 8 week injury, season ending injury. We've got four buckets. Which one of them it is, at this point, we have absolutely no idea. And I know that maybe that's not a great conversation topic for a podcast of, like, yeah, it could be anything. But to jump to any conclusion as to what it is at this point is foolhardy at best. I'm certainly not a doctor, and apparently every doctor on Twitter has an completely different idea of what this could be anyway. So let's, I think, go through this, okay, and say, what are the options if any of these situations come to pass, okay? The first is that he's back playing against the Colts this week. If that's the case, obviously praise Vince that is what ended up happening. Probably some limited mobility. Probably have to change the game plan a little bit. Jordan, as we saw today, for better or worse, did a lot of throwing with his arm and not with his feet. So he doesn't always need a sturdy base and doesn't always need to plant on that back foot to do what he needs to do. He's got a very talented arm, and you can probably work around it if it's that type of injury, or maybe there's some limited mobility, but he can still throw the ball well. If that's what it is, again, praise be to Vince. And you are very thankful, and that would be great, great news. But there probably would be some mobility concerns going into week two against Indy. If it is a 1 to 2 week injury, the first thing, let me say this overall, and of course, there's never a great time for an injury. And certainly if it's anything sort of season ending or anything close to it, that's always going to be brutal. But talk about one of the worst possible times to have it happen, meaning Malik Willis just got here. Like, if this happens like week eight and he's out like 2 to 4 weeks, all right, well, Malik at least has a much better understanding of the playbook, and you know, you can build something around him. This is his third week on the team, and he's going to have to potentially start a game if Jordan Love can't go. Like, that is a very tough situation. But let's kind of, again, play this out. If it's a 1 to 2 week injury, you probably go with Malik Willis over the next couple weeks. I could see a world in a scenario where you're clearly going to bring Sean Clifford up to the active roster at that point, would be my guess, if it's a 1 to 2 week thing, just to make sure he doesn't get signed by some other team and make sure that he is ready to go on game day. And in that situation, I could see a world in which there are maybe series or packages that are for both Willis and or Clifford. If Willis doesn't have a full understanding of the playbook yet and can't execute everything that Matt LaFleur wants him to execute, you might need Sean Clifford in that situation, because this is such a fresh playbook for Willis. Or they may just have to pare it down so much that, again, you're not going to have the full access to your full playbook. It might be, 30, 40 plays that they go into the game with. Maybe that's even aggressive, but it might be 30 to 40 plays that they go and try to beat Indianapolis with. Might be very pared down. That would be like a 1 to 2 week scenario. If it's 4 to 8 weeks, I still think you're probably looking at a Malik Willis scenario where you try to get him going, try to win some games. Can they survive a 1 to 2 week injury? Yeah. You try to go 1-1 in those 2 weeks with Malik Willis. I think they can accomplish that. Matt LaFleur is a very good offensive mind. He can build an offense, especially with the talent that Malik Willis has. Like, you can figure something out there. So can you go 1-1? Can you keep the season rolling? Yes. 4 to 8 weeks? Let's just split the difference. Let's say it's a 6 week injury. All right. So can Malik Willis go 3-3 and be 3-4 when Jordan gets back overall? Hopefully. If he goes 2-4, all right, now you're 2-5. It's going to make the rest of the season very challenging, especially as Jordan just gets kind of back in the swing of things. If you go 1-5, all right, now you're 1-6. And now the rest of the season almost needs to be perfect. And of course, if you go 0-6, now you're 0-7, and you're basically just, you need a perfect season for the remainder of the year for the most part at that point. So 4 to 8 weeks. Again, I think you still probably go with Malik Willis and hope for the best. I don't think you probably pick somebody up and try to get them to know the playbook. And again, especially if it is like a 4 to 8 week diagnosis where you're not sure, I don't think you're going to go out to get somebody and then Jordan could be back in 4 weeks and you pick somebody up for no reason. And then, of course, the question is, what if it's season ending? then you have two choices, in my opinion. The two choices are, do you just go with Malik Willis and try to figure it out, see if he can come along and hope for the best, knowing that, you know what, your season's pretty much FUBAR at that point. Yeah, I think that that's an option. And you know that no matter what quarterback that you bring in, there's probably not a deep playoff run in the cards here. Just is what it is. And you look it in the face and say, you know what? This season is now no longer about a win-loss record. The season would be then about developing these young players, and Malik Willis would fall in that category. Bringing in a Ryan Tannehill in that situation is probably, again, it gets you in no man's land, gets you in purgatory, gets you in 7-10 land where you're just ruining draft status and you're not developing a young quarterback like Malik Willis. So these are depressing topics. I get it. I'm not trying to be a downer. And like I said, we went through four options, right? The first one is which he's just back ready to go against the Colts. And it was hopefully not anything that was major and season ending. And then of course the exact opposite end of that is season ending. So how this goes is going to be dependent upon the injury update that we get, hopefully sooner rather than later. And hopefully it's good news, but to me, it's still worth kind of going over what those options are. My guess is it's either Jordan's back and ready to go, or you proceed with Malik Willis, whether it's 1 week or the rest of the season. It's hard to envision a world in which Tannehill makes a ton of sense. You know, do you want to spend, let's say he's asking for $8 million. Do you want to spend that price goes up when your quarterback goes down. Do you want to spend $8 million on 1 year for Ryan Tannehill? When again, your ceiling in that situation is maybe 10-7, maybe. And that would be probably fairly aggressive. I don't think so. I don't think there's any future in that. I would rather take my chances with Malik Willis and see if you can develop him and just take a youthful approach and get these guys playing on the same page. And maybe you can shock some teams, win some games. We'll see. But to me, then the season becomes about development. As I mentioned, one of the worst possible times that this could have happened with Malik Willis just getting on the team. The only small, I guess, sliver of positivity here is that they have a couple extra days before Packers Colts. At least it wasn't a Monday night game, and all of a sudden you've got 6 days until Packers Colts. They've got, you know, the two extra days because of the Friday game. They've got what, 9 days up until Packers Colts. So you know, there's a little bit of a window there. Probably not enough, but again, I'm not going to jump to any conclusions. We're just going to have to take this moment by moment until we get that update as to whether or not Jordan's going to be back sooner rather than later, or again, worst case scenario that we don't even want to speak into existence. We finally made it. It's opening week. Our fantasy drafts are done. Our pick'em selections are in. And the last thing we need to do is get our prize pick selections made for this week's incredible slate of action. And to kick off football season, one Caleb Williams passing yard gets you one win on prize picks every week in September. That's right. Only 1 yard gets you an automatic win every football weekend in September. 4 weeks of free W's. Don't miss the deal on prize picks because it's gone when September ends. What I love about prize picks is that they always put their members first, so all withdrawals are fast, safe, and secure. And when my picks hit, I can get my money in as quick as 15 minutes. So obviously, yes, I'm going to be playing Caleb Williams to start the season, and I'll also be going with the newest Packers star running back, Josh Jacobs, against the Eagles in Brazil as well. And the best part is that you can download the Prize Picks app today and use code PACKADAY for a first deposit match up to $100. That's code PACKADAY on Prize Picks for a deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. What's going on, everybody? I am so insanely happy that football is back. And as excited as I am right now, I can't even begin to tell you how excited I am to be back at Lambeau Field. And this year, I'm going to be taking my oldest son to his first ever regular season game, and that moment is going to mean so much to me. Thankfully, as I search for tickets to the game, Game Time has a brand new feature called Game Time Picks that makes getting tickets to see your favorite teams play live even easier. I'm actually scrolling through Game Time right now as we speak, and there are two tickets exactly in the section where I want, and it's currently listed as one of their amazing deals. Section 137, two tickets, and it's just so insanely easy to navigate and find amazing seats at the best prices, plus have the exact view of the seats you're purchasing. I can see them right now. And my absolute favorite part, Game Time has the lowest price guarantee. You'll get the lowest price to the game, or Game Time will credit you 110% of the difference. So take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code PACKADAY for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code PACKADAY, P-A-C-K-A-D-A-Y, for $20 off. Download Game Time today. What time is it? Game Time. All right, let's talk about the game itself. Enough about Jordan for now, at least from a future standpoint. Packers lose 34-29. Mistakes upon mistakes. I've never quite seen a game like this. I'll go over that in just a moment. These were the mistakes. I went back and I did the rewatch. This was the list of mistakes that I had. False start, which ended up being a late snap by Josh Myers. 12 men on the field, negating a touchdown. False start on fourth down, had to punt instead of go for it. Misprotection on Zach Bond on a sack. He came free, nobody blocked him. Holding on Rasheed Walker in the red zone. A Dontavian Wicks drop. Holding on Tucker Kraft in the red zone. Watson drop touchdown / Dobbs illegal pick. The illegal pick, I think that's 1 yard within the line of scrimmage. I think that's a bad call, but call or no call, Christian Watson's got to come down with that catch. And he didn't. That was a drop either way. It would not have ended in a touchdown, pick or no pick. Love then comes back and misses to Christian Watson in the back of the end zone. That was a missed opportunity there. False start on Kenny Clark. Both Xavier McKinney and Isaiah McDuffie missed tackles on one play, I should say. TJ Slayton, false start on fourth and one, giving the Eagles an automatic first down. Dontavian Wicks with a slip and a drop. Extra point taken off the board, going for two, and then, of course, they failed the two-point conversion. Jair Alexander missed tackle. Quay misses Saquon completely on the touchdown run. Love should have had a pick six to N'Kobe Dean. Thankfully, N'Kobe Dean dropped it, but that easily could have been, should have been a pick six. False start on Rasheed Walker. Jair Alexander missed tackle. Stokes and McDuffie simultaneously missed tackles on the same play. Jair beat bad for the touchdown. And then on that play, Bullard takes a really bad angle after the play as well. That's that huge touchdown to AJ Brown. Josh Jacobs fumble. Thankfully, Bo Melton was able to recover that one, but still can't put the ball on the ground. Illegal shift on Tucker Kraft. Love throws low to Jaden Reed over the middle. Then Love throws behind Romeo Dobbs. Dobbs still had the opportunity to catch it, but couldn't hang on. Illegal shift again. Illegal formation on the punt team, which is on Isaiah McDuffie. Holding on Rasheed Walker. That was a bit of an iffy one, but they still called it. Jordan Love interception over the middle on the attempt to Luke Musgrave. Quay Walker missed tackle. Love missed throw to Dontavian Wicks. Jaden Reed with a drop. Braden Narveson a missed field goal. Keyshawn Nixon drops a potential pick six. Kenny Clark with a holding penalty. Eric Stokes with a missed tackle. Javon Bullard, Jair Alexander with missed tackles on the same play. Isaiah McDuffie with a missed tackle. And then Xavier McKinney offsides on a field goal. 39 mistakes. And there easily could have been ones that I missed. It was as mistake-riddled of a game that I have ever seen. And what I meant before when I said I've never quite seen a game like this, I've seen a lot of different losses. We've seen Green Bay from ahead and blow the game. We've seen Green Bay just come out flat and listless and not prepared. We've seen Green Bay just not being able to get something going on offense or just steamrolled on defense. I'm not sure I've ever quite seen a game where, especially offensively, I loved the play calling for the most part and the game plan from Matt LaFleur. This could have easily been a 40-point performance from the offense had it not been for penalties, mistakes, drop passes, missed throws, interceptions. This was a complete failure in execution on offense. Now that, as much as I can praise Matt for the game plan and the play calling, the execution falls on Matt's plate too. So getting this team ready to play so that they can go out and actually execute those plays, that's on his job description as well. So great job play calling, great job play design, great job game planning, really poor job getting this team to execute. Because if they did, again, I think they easily put up 40 plus in this game. That's how beautiful of a game plan and how many open receivers they had. They just kept screwing it up. And on defense, I didn't think this was a great game plan. I didn't think this was our great introduction to this new scheme or anything like that. But there were plays to be made. And they did make some of them. They got a gift of a fumble. You know, they get two interceptions, could have had a couple other ones. but you miss some turnover-worthy plays, a possible pick six for Keyshawn Nixon, and then you add on top of that a bunch of penalties and a crap ton of missed tackles, and it's just a recipe for disaster. And that's what I mean, where like I've never just quite seen a team just have 39 different crazy mistakes through the course of a game in a game that they had every right to win. And it was just their own boneheaded play and poor play out on the field that lost them the game when everything was right there for them. It was just a very weird, you know, sort of loss that, I'm not sure I've seen it happen in quite that way. The Seahawks loss in the 2014 championship game had a similar multitude of mistakes, obviously a much higher stakes game, but it felt different in this one because even in that Seahawks game, it was like they had the lead and then they, you know, just got tight and made all these mistakes at the end. And there were certainly some at the beginning too, but this one was just like every single play was just stacking something on top of itself and to the point where you end up with 39 mistakes and you just can't come back from it. And of course that lends it to the discussion of, well, clearly Green Bay could have played more in the preseason. Wouldn't have hurt unless they got hurt. I said two things this offseason, and I'll say it again right now, and I stand by it right now. The first is that I think this is a screwed if you do, screwed if you don't, double-edged sword for a head coach. If you go out, just like we saw Jordy tear his ACL in preseason, if this Jordan Love injury would have happened in preseason in a meaningless game, Matt LaFleur would have been dragged for it for months, maybe for even longer than that. Why is Jordan even in the game? Now he's out for the year. The season's over. Why was he playing in a meaningless preseason game? It would happen. It would legitimately happen. Same if it was Josh Jacobs, Xavier McKinney, Jair Alexander, whatever player you want to put in there, whoever your favorite player is, they tear their ACL in preseason in a meaningless game when they didn't need to be out there. The coach is going to hear about it. And on the flip side, if you do not play your guys in preseason and you come out and have maybe the sloppiest game that anyone's ever seen, that's a bad look too. And so that's number one. I trust the coach to come up with that decision. It's a sort of darned if you do, darned if you don't sort of thing. It's a double-edged sword, whatever you want to cliche call it. But I trust the coach to make the decision that he feels is best for his team. But you do have to understand, if you don't play your guys in preseason and they come out like this, it's going to be a question and it's going to be something that, you know, Matt is going to probably have to go back to the drawing board a little bit again next year with. And my second thing that I've said is, if the Kansas City Chiefs feel like they can play their guys in the preseason, then I feel comfortable playing my guys. If the team that is back-to-back Super Bowl champs, best team in the NFL right now, if they go out and play their guys in preseason because they know the value of coming out strong to start the year because they have aspirations of being that number one seed, getting that bye and going and winning a Super Bowl, if they go out and that's what their choice is, I can live with myself being like, you know what? They're the standard bearers. They have the most valuable player in all of football, maybe in all of sports right now, in Patrick Mahomes. And if they feel like he can be out there for preseason, then you're damn right. Everyone else probably should be there out there for the Green Bay Packers. But my overarching is still, I do think it's a double-edged sword. There's no great answer, but if I'm going to lean towards one right now, and this is not just benefit of hindsight, I'm going to go with the Chiefs formula and say, you know what? If they can do it, we can too. And would Green Bay have played better had they played another couple quarters in preseason? Who's to say? No idea. Maybe it could have been worse. Who knows? Or maybe they do lose a couple players due to injury, and that could have maybe made things worse today as well. But I do think that if you're going to, you know, sort of have the level of mistakes and mental errors and missed tackles and everything like that in your first game, then it's going to beg the question of, do they need to play more in preseason? And based on what we saw today, I think the answer is pretty much a resounding yes. Just think that's the way it has to be. If this is the way you're going to play week one when you don't have that additional preseason time. Of course, one of the big talking points was the field. I will go back on what I said in the post-game show. I was wrong. I'll clearly say that. So my point in the post-game show, a couple things when asked about the field. One, people were saying it was a soccer field. By all accounts, it is not a soccer field. This is a specific football field that both the Packers staff and the Eagles staff, their field crews, worked on together, made specifically for this game. Obviously, slipping was the big thing. That still seems to be mostly a moisture problem that was probably due to a lot of the high humidity in the area. But I mentioned that I thought the field looked like it was in good condition overall. There were a couple of pictures after the game where the field looked in very rough shape. So I will take back my comments on that. Either way, it was a very aesthetically unpleasing product. When you have just everyone slipping and falling and looking like it's on an ice skating rink. And I don't think that's necessarily of like a international or Brazil thing, but they got to figure out a way to make fields better and safer than that. Cause that was atrocious. It's not good for the game. It's not good for the players. It's not enjoyable to watch. Do I think that that's the reason that Green Bay lost? No. Philly had to go through the exact same thing. That's the exact same situation for both teams. So you got to go out and make your plays, adjust your cleats if you need to, get out there and go make it. And like Jaden Reed had no problem finding ways to cut on a dime and make big plays. So if he can do it, I think others can too. But definitely disappointing to see all the slippage and then the condition of the field towards the end of the game from the pictures that I saw. Penalties, obviously a major one here too. We talked about it in our whole list of mistakes, but 10 penalties, 71 yards, and then some bad calls too, right? The Jaire Alexander, extremely weak and controversial call at the end. No way that is pass interference or holding, whatever they called on Jaire. There was zero contact there whatsoever. They might lean on each other a little bit, but they're both slipping. Just absolutely no penalty. It would have been 3rd and 13. Instead, they get the automatic first down and continue to bleed out the clock. And then Rashid Walker had a weak call through the course of the game. There's a couple other ones, some inconsistent officiating, but is that the reason Green Bay lost? No, it's not. They lost because their own mistakes. As far as defensively goes, I would say overall, it's a pretty disappointing performance. You know, yes, they generated turnovers. And when you get 3 turnovers and end up plus 2, you're going to win far more often than not. But you got to get stops when you need stops. You can't allow 30 plus points. Green Bay needed to do a much better job on offense of generating points off of the turnovers that this defense was able to get, which the offense was very poor at. The tackling was absolutely abysmal. There were some things that they did well. Again, getting the turnovers was huge. And then they clearly decided that they wanted Jalen Hurts to have to beat the Packers with his arm. And there were times where he clearly did that, but he could not get going on the run game. He only had 13 carries for 33 yards. So Green Bay did do a much better job of containing Hurts and make it so that he couldn't win with his legs. The issue was he just kept winning with his arm. And Saquon Barkley was winning with his legs as well. So those were the bigger issues, but tackling and then just allowing some of those big plays. Couldn't get off the field when needed. I thought they were dictated to more than they were doing the dictating. I thought this was a defense that was going to dictate a little bit more. I didn't see that in this game. Long season left. As I mentioned, the future of Jeff Hafley is just beginning to get written. This one game is not going to affect the long-term vision of what Jeff Hafley is and what he does and everything like that. But the honeymoon is definitely over. now people are going to want to see much better defense in week 2 than what we saw in week 1. Against the Eagles in Brazil. All right. What else do we want to go over here? Some interesting snap counts. So Tucker Kraft at tight end played 64 snaps. Luke Musgrave played 17. Ben Sims played 1. So 18 for Musgrave and Sims combined, 17 of those Musgrave, 64 for Tucker Kraft. First of all, so much for any back injury, I guess. But number 2, when I said I thought Tucker Kraft was tight end 1, not even I would have thought the discrepancy was 64 to 17. No chance. But I did, I have been saying and sort of been on the bandwagon of Tucker Kraft tight end 1. I didn't think it really mattered. I thought they were going to do a lot more 2 tight end sets and we'd see almost just as much Musgrave. But there was a very big discrepancy there. Huge for Tucker Kraft to get that many snaps. Wide receiver, Romeo Doubs played 58. Reed played 48. Watson played 42. Wicks played 31. And Melton played 8. So if you want to know who the number 1 wide receiver is, at least based off of snaps, it is Romeo Doubs, followed by Reed, Watson, Wicks, and Melton. Sean Ryan played 42 snaps, while Jordan Morgan played 28. Josh Jacobs played 49 snaps, while Emmanuel Wilson played in 16. At linebacker, Quay Walker played 76 snaps. Isaiah McDuffie played 74. Eric Wilson played 15 and Edgerrin Cooper played 11. At corner, opposite Jaire Alexander, Eric Stokes played 67 snaps while Carrington Valentine played 9. Evan Williams did not play a single snap in this game, which was a little bit surprising. I don't think we really saw any Javon Bullard in the slot at all. Preston Smith had 54 snaps. Rashawn Gary had 49. Enagbare had 30. And LVN only with 19. So it does feel like Enagbare is the 3 and LVN is the 4 at edge rusher. Meanwhile, Kenny Clark played 56 snaps, TJ Slayton 40, Devontae Wyatt 36, and Carl Brooks with 20. For Jordan Love, 17 to 34, 260 yards, 2 touchdowns, 1 interception. Not a great day from Jordan overall. Made some really big plays, but some big mistakes too. Had some missed throws, the big interception over the middle of the field. Just never felt like he was comfortable or in a rhythm. I think part of that had to do with the field. Looked like any time he tried to plant, he was slipping out there, so I think he almost tried to start relying on his arm a little bit more. He was also cramping up, which could have played a factor. Just a game where he never got in rhythm. Not a brutal game. This would be one where if Aaron Rodgers had a day like this, he probably would have got to the podium and said, or maybe with McAfee the next day and said, hey, my worst days are most quarterbacks' best days. If you got 260, 2 touchdowns, a pick, obviously 50% completion percentage isn't great, but there are a lot worse days at quarterback out there, and there's going to be worse days for Jordan Love at some point, but not his best day and just some inconsistencies there. Jaden Reed was phenomenal, had 4 catches, 138 and a touchdown, had 1 rush for 33 and another touchdown, looked completely dynamic. Remember, he also had the 38-yard touchdown that was nullified by both teams having 12 men on the field. So he was on one. He looked absolutely fantastic, looked like the burst was a little bit better. And this is exactly what I talked about. Jaden Reed was probably the quietest receiver at all of training camp. Like, just didn't do a whole heck of a lot. And I said, don't worry, he's going to be just fine. They're going to start scheming him a little bit more, get him more involved in the game plan, and he will be a player that you see shine a lot more in the regular season. And lo and behold, Jaden Reed, heck of a start to the season. Emmanuel Wilson, 4 carries, 46 yards. Really nice start, start to his season. I thought he ran hard. I thought he ran physical. I thought he found creases, found space, wasn't messing around, just got north and south. There's something there, and he's going to do a lot, I think, to try to earn that number 2 spot full-time. It's going to be up to Marshawn Lloyd now to show that he can unseat Emmanuel Wilson, because that was a very good start for Wilson. Josh Jacobs had a really poor start to the game. I think a lot more due to the blocking than anything from Jacobs. But there's maybe a couple runs in there. He maybe could have got north and south a little bit better, but he still ends the day 16 carries, 84 yards, 5.3 yard average, and 2 catches for 20 yards. So 104 all-purpose yards on the day with over 5 yards per touch. Not a bad day at the office for Josh Jacobs. You wish he would have got going a little bit earlier, but later in the game, he looked much, much better, breaking off some explosive runs. Jaire Alexander, tough game for him. You know, had some big plays. Of course, the interception back of the end zone, gave up the big play to AJ Brown, gave up some other completions, missed a couple tackles, just sort of the Jaire Alexander experience right now. I think he'll bounce back, but those lazy coverage on AJ Brown, extremely lazy coverage. That is something that cannot happen, and he's going to have to clean that up moving forward. Some miscellaneous. Edgerrin Cooper got in again for those 10, 11 snaps, whatever it was. Thought he played very fast, very physical. And I think hopefully that's a harbinger of things to come for Edgerrin Cooper. He had a very impressive small sample size in this game. Josh Myers got hurt. He did not play the final 2 plays of the game. All eyes were on Jordan Love, but Myers did not go in for either of those plays. So that'll be worth keeping an eye on moving forward. It was Sean Ryan who went in at center, not Jacob Monk. So that was a little bit interesting as well. And then the kickoffs. We talked about the kickoffs. They're going to have to change it if they actually want returns. If they want this to be something that's in the game, keeping it as is right now is not going to do it. The penalty isn't harsh enough. They're going to have to change it, or we're just going to see every team really be kicking it out of the end zone. All eyes are on Jordan Love. It's kind of all that matters right now. Up next is the Indianapolis Colts. We will await word on Jordan Love's status, and hopefully we finally get some good news. And it's not anything too serious, but hope for the best, brace for the worst. And yeah, just really hope that this is not anything for Jordan's sake, for the Packers' sake, for our sake as fans. Be very tough to see him miss a significant period of time for a variety of reasons, but hopefully he bounces back and the injury isn't as bad as what it may have seemed. Last but not least, shout out to our Hall of Fame and All-Pro members, Most Hated Minnesotan, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Shea Braddad, Brandon Paletta, Jennifer Wright, Boom Handle, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, Dave McCluskey, Donald Decker, Dan Miller, Alex Huang, Arnaldo Espinoza, Peter Rataka, Caleb Cookster, SoCal Pack, Dan Gesford, Love and Football, Jay Zimmerman, B. Brown, and Jay Foreman. Appreciate you all. Thank you for being here. I know it's not the topic that we wanted to discuss, I know we want to discuss a victory Saturday, a big win against the Eagles, a 1-0 start to the season, a healthy team coming out of it. But instead, we get a wet field, slipping, you know, penalty, mistake-laden game that ended with a Jordan Love injury that we have no idea how severe it's going to be. Not ideal, but we will stick with it. We will be right back here tomorrow to discuss maybe some Jordan Love news and where Green Bay goes from here. It'll still be an exciting season one way or the other. We'll be here to cover it 365 days a year. But until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.